The Fan on Demand.
Everybody, it's time for Aces on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, I'm Roger Lajoie. Tom Tebbit on board, as always, and a busy show, which includes the great Martina Navratilova coming up. Your chance to win Rogers Cup tickets as well. We've got a full show for you, and we're looking forward to it. Mr. Tebbit, how are you, sir?
I'm great, Rog.
Well, we've got, first of all, Martina Navratilova later in the show needs no introduction. How is she? Let's talk a little bit about her before we get into your first guest.
Well, she's 55 years old now, and as you'll hear, she still plays a fine game of tennis, and she does a lot of commentary these days for Tennis Channel, and she's just a really busy person. Well, we talked a little bit about possibly coaching and stuff like that, and she basically said, well, maybe, but there's just too many other things going on for her to do it full time. So she always impressed me. I remember way back when she defected from the Czech Republic. I think it was when she was about 19 or 18. And it was amazing how she picked up English so quickly. She's just a really intelligent woman. And obviously, in her day, the best athlete ever to play tennis, but women's tennis. And nowadays, there's a lot of them out there that actually make her look like a bit of a pipsqueak. It's kind of amazing. She's only 5'8". In the old days, she was a giant.
She was a monster. Yeah, no, it's amazing when you look at it that way. Well, we look forward to that interview coming up later in the program. Also, we've got Tom's mailbag. We asked for questions throughout the week, and we got a ton of them. Tom will answer your questions. And stick around, because just before 8 o'clock, we have our mystery sound voice. You can win Rogers Cup tickets for the Monday night and qualify to win that great tennis racket among all the winners later in the season. Getting a lot of good reaction from that.
That's right. Yeah, it's a Wilson BLX series racket. Roger Federer uses one of those rackets, so it would be a nice prize at the end of the show.
And it's always a voice of a great tennis legend. So we haven't got to me yet. Maybe it'll be me this week. We'll see who it is. But it's coming up later in the program. This segment of Aces is brought to you by Tennis Canada. Check out Rogers Cup in Toronto. It's coming up August 4th to 12th. For tickets, visit rogerscup.com. Okay, our first guest up is an interesting guy. Tell us about Harry.
Well, Harry Fauquier is a former Canadian Davis Cup player and a Davis Cup captain. And in 1966, he played the opening match at Wimbledon on the brand new, fresh, unplayed upon, green as you can ever imagine grass court. And he also has been in the court construction business for about 30 years. So he's been around tennis, knows a lot of stuff. Harry's an interesting fellow.
Interesting fellow indeed. And here's Tom's conversation with him.
Harry Fauquier, welcome to Aces.
Thank you very much, Tom. Glad to be here.
Many moons ago, way back in 1966, you played the very first match on the Wimbledon Center Court against Roy Emerson, who was a two-time defending champion. That's on a virgin, perfect grass court at the Cathedral of Tennis. What do you remember about that experience?
Well, I remember a lot of things, and one of them was that I was so nervous I could barely breathe. When I was warming up, I thought, gee, this is not too bad. I'm going to be all right here today. And then all of a sudden, the umpire said play, and it was dead silence, and I couldn't find my grip on my racket. So the pain began there, and I struggled through, but it was really very enjoyable, and the court was very, very greasy and slippery and fast, and I remember passing Emerson three times in the first game on his serve and thinking, I am never going to play a better game than this, and I still lost the game.
And what was all the pomp and circumstance in terms of sitting in a small room beforehand and being given instructions by the referee, etc., before you went on the court?
You know, it wasn't as scary, that aspect of it wasn't as scary, because people had told me this is, and the officials there told me this is exactly how it's going to happen. This is exactly how you're going to walk out on the court, and this is exactly what you're going to do. And being a very obedient boy at that time in my life, that's what I did.
And how tough was it? I mean, Emerson was pretty well the class of the field that year. I think he got injured, ran into the net post later in the tournament, so he didn't actually win the tournament, but he had a real shot at three in a row that year.
He was so much better than everybody else, and everybody else knew it. So everybody was, the only way somebody was going to win the tournament is if he hit the umpire's chair full tilt, and that's exactly what happened. I think he was playing Owen Davidson in the quarterfinals. So it was quite sad to see, because he, not only did he beat me very badly, but he beat everybody else after me very badly as well. I mean, he was really steamrolling the entire field.
Yeah, that's tough. So, Harry, I think you've been in the court construction business for about 30 years now. I assume that probably you do the courts for the Rexall Center for the Rogers Cup. And I assume most of the time you're building hard courts. I was just wondering, how has the construction of hard courts evolved over that time?
Really not very much. You know, the hard courts that are played on here and in the United States are built, you know, on a solid base of, with asphalt. And the only thing that's really changed is we now apply, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 coats of a rubberized slurry, and then we put the sand-filled acrylic playing surface on top of that. And that, although they're still hard courts, there is a cushioning effect to them, and it really helps the guys when they're playing those long matches.
You do the courts, as I said, for the Rexall Center. Where would you be in the process this year?
Well, we've rebuilt a couple of courts, and we've ordered all the material, and they have some other promotions that are going on at the tennis center, and we'll be in there in the early part of July.
And it'll take you 2 or 3 weeks to get them shipshape, or would you totally resurface?
Yes, we redo them all.
And
the practice courts and the match courts and the stadium court, the grandstand court, we do them all every year.
And everybody always talks about the speed of a court, how fast it is, how slow it is. How much can you sort of tailor-make a court for the instructions of the tournament director?
Well, actually quite a lot. I mean, if you take the sand out, you can make the court quite fast. However, new courts, whether they have a sand infill in the final application or if they don't, they're still a little bit slow. You can really slow them down by adding more sand or adding a larger sieve size, larger grit size to the courts. But most of the time we make the courts play medium, and when they're brand new, they play sort of medium slow, and, you know, after a year of play or after the tournament's over, they really chew them up. And then, you know, the kids and everybody else play on them for the rest of the year, and they speed up a little bit after that. But they're still relatively slow, but not slow like clay.
Do you have a scale of numbers for what speed you can make a court, and what would they want for a pro tournament like the Rogers Cup?
Well, I think there's a thing called the pace rating, and they're asking for 3, and we seem to be delivering that because I never hear anybody complaining.
Right. And how popular would clay courts be these days, say, in Ontario or specifically in the Toronto area?
Well, they're actually quite popular. People are a little bit afraid of the maintenance of them, but they don't have to be. But clay is having a little bit of a resurgence because, you know, the baby boomers, of which I'm one of them, it gets to be a little more difficult to play on the hard courts, and clay is very forgiving.
And what about clay indoors? Is that a pretty good option as well?
Yes, it's a good option. It's a different sort of animal than outdoor clay courts. You have to pay a little bit more attention to them because they have a tendency to harden up, and you have to scarify them more often and, you know, watch how much water you put on or how much water you don't put on. So they're a little bit different. However, it's still nice to play on clay, whether it's inside or outside.
Harry, I don't think I'm giving away any secrets here, but you're not the tallest guy to ever play tennis.
No, but I might have been the fastest.
Good for you. Over the years, there have been a few guys who have not been so tall, been, you know, fairly short players who have done very well. Are there any ones that you particularly admired?
Well, you know, the two boys from Belgium, the Rochus brothers, are really spectacular players, and they're 5'5", and you know, and Ken Rosewall, I don't think, was much more than 5'7 or 5'8, and he was as good a person who's ever played the game. He really understood the game. He was a very talented. And then you go back over time, you know, Bitsy Grant was an exceptional player. He was 5'5", but he was in Don Budge's age. But most of the players now, you know, the serve, the leverage on the serve is so important that, you know, the smaller guys have to, you know, not only serve well, but they have to be incredibly fast, and they have to play well in every aspect of their game in order to compete. There's, you know, you can't just get by with a big serve.
You go back probably to would remember people like Bob Bedard and Lord Mayne in the 1950s. Nowadays, obviously in Canada, we have a guy named Milos Raonic who's pretty outstanding. Where would you situate him in the spectrum of Canadian players over that time?
You know, that's an interesting question because he's having some spectacular results, and I suspect he's going to have some even better results. But if you go on results alone, you know, perhaps Lorne Mayne might have been our best player ever. You know, Greg Rozetsky was a good player, but Milos is certainly going to be either our best player ever or very, very close to it. But these kind of comparisons are hard to do because, you know, you get old guys like me remembering how fantastic things were in the old days and discrediting things today. But Milos is really has a superior serve. I mean, maybe the best serve I've ever seen. And that's very nice because he, you know, he grew up 10 miles from here. And I, you know, I've watched him play as a junior, and he's, I'm very pleased for him.
And what most impresses you overall about his game?
He struggles with his movement, and he is a very, very determined, and he, you know, his response is, well, I'll just serve better. And most people don't have that option, and he does. He, you know, he may have the best serve ever, and when he decides that he's going to serve better and better and better, you know, you're in real trouble. And he's got a superior serve. It's beautifully produced.
I know you've worked with some young players and still do. Where do you went to University of Michigan, I think, on a tennis scholarship. Where do you fit the college scholarship option, the U.S. college scholarship option, into the overall picture of a young player developing his game?
That's a hard question. Most of the time, I encourage young players to delay making the choice to jump into pro tennis or to try and go on the tour and try the satellite circuit. I try to ask them to delay that decision as long as possible because it's very difficult to make it on the pro tour now. However, some players do make that decision and they're doing well. I think Philippe Pelliwell is doing quite well as a young Canadian, and you know, I'm sort of looking forward to see how well he'll do.
And how much do you enjoy following the game these days? Obviously, there's a lot more penetration with live streaming on computers and television coverage. Is it just as much fun to watch the Wimbledon final as it was maybe many years ago?
Yeah, I think so. Although during the year when I'm working and you know, I don't think about it very much, but I always seem to find myself in front of the television when the big matches come up. So you know, the game is still in my heart.
Well, Harry Fouquet, thank you very much for being a guest on Aces tonight.
Thank you very much, Tom. I appreciate that.
Well, I think everybody tries to be somewhere to watch a match like the Wimbledon final or something. A lot of people are like Harry, and this time of the year, obviously, there's a phenomenal amount of important tennis going on with the French Open, Wimbledon, the Olympics, the Rogers Cup, and then the U.S. Open. So we'll all be watching a lot of tennis live and on TV.
It would be fantastic. We've got about 30 seconds. You're going to be live there, of course, as always. The event, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess it is. Yeah, there's just something about Wimbledon. That center court, there's no advertising signs there. It's just pure as the driven snow. The only thing the last couple of years is the roof, but it's been there 4 years now. We're getting used to it, so it's still Wimbledon. It's still a pretty special place.
Sure is. That's Tom Tebbit. I'm Roger Lajoie. Speaking of special, Martina Navratilova is coming up in moments on Aces. Don't go away. This is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Tennis, anyone?
This is Milos Raonic, and you're listening to Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
You're listening to Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm Roger Lajoie. Tom Tebbit is here, as always. This segment of Aces is brought to you by Corona Extra, the official beer sponsor of the ATP Tour. Corona Extra, ready to serve, ATP World Tour premier partner. Tom, Martina Navratilova, let's get into this.
Well, 9 times a Wimbledon champion. I was there in 94. She went for number 10. Lost to Conchita Martinez, a real shame. But what can you say? A living legend of the game.
And here she is.
Martina Navratilova, welcome to Aces. You've won Wimbledon 9 times and are an honorary member at the All England Club. What's your favorite perk of being a member of the club?
Well, actually, the one that I haven't used before, which is really going to the club during the year, because I'm never in London, and even if I am in London, it's just going to Wimbledon is a bit of a schlep. So I don't really use it as much, but hopefully one day I will. But other than that, maybe not having to show my badge, because you just have your members. You know, the little members badge, you know, the little round dealy that they give you. So I don't have to go through that. But they still check my bag when I come in. I'm like, really?
Everyone talks about the grass at Wimbledon changing, and I think, to be more precise, actually, maybe it's the ground underneath that is firmer nowadays. How would you play at Wimbledon these days compared to when you were playing there and winning the tournament 9 times?
Well, I would definitely have to augment to coming in. I couldn't just be serving volleying like I used to. I'd have to mix it up a lot more, and coming more after a couple of ground strokes, set up the point, and just mix it up, and you know, that's it. I mean, it's so much easier nowadays to keep the ball low and then hit the passing shot that you would really have to come in on more forcing shots. I'll probably serve a volley 2/3 of the time and stay back. I mean, depends on who you play and all that, but that would be my guess.
Would that be a bit more fun, staying back a little more, or would you rather be like 100% serve and volley?
I don't mind. You know, it's on the grass. It's fine if I can do that, but on the grass, I think I could. But on slower surfaces, I couldn't. And I think that's where the game has changed too much one way, where it's really favoring the baseliners. And so I would like to see the courts a little bit faster, so you can still serve and volley. You can come in on chip and charge rather than killer approach shots. So I'd like to see the surfaces a little bit faster, grass included. I think they've slowed it down a little too much everywhere. But, you know, that's what it is. So, if the best serve and volleyer ever can't serve and volley, then you've gone too far.
Now, that makes sense. That makes sense. You're doing quite a bit of TV commentary these days. How have your skills as a broadcaster evolved?
From what I hear, I've gotten better. I feel more comfortable. I think I'm no more when to not say something. I think that takes time to learn when to be quiet. Sometimes less is more, and I think I've gotten a lot better in that. Not that I've ever talked too much, but it's the timing of it. You know, sometimes you just need to shut up. and I try not to state the obvious, obviously. I mean, sometimes you still do that, but or sometimes you don't get to finish your sentence because something else happens. But overall, with Tennis Channel, it's really easy because I have plenty of time to speak and say what I think is important. But I guess it's learning or having learned better to censor myself what's important to say and when to say it. Most of all, it's the timing when you say something.
You played till you were 50, I guess, and Roger Federer is only 30 nowadays, but, I mean, he's an all-time great, as you are as well. Would you have any advice for him about playing tennis as you get older, or just your general approach to the game?
No, I mean, he knows what he's doing. I don't need to tell him anything. I think you just need to pick and choose more when you peak. You know, you can't just be great all the time, and it seems Roger's played his best tennis after the U.S. Open last year in those tournaments, but hasn't played his best at the Grand Slams, and I don't know why that is. I would need to, you know, talk to him and find out what's going on. But it just gets more difficult. Everything takes longer when you get older, and so you really have to pick your spots and save your energy and know that still, no matter what you do, you're gonna have those off days are gonna be more off than they were when you were 25, and it's frustrating. You have to accept it. You know, and try to deal with it, and also know that you're going to get more nervous. That's what happens.
Right. Petra Kvitova won Wimbledon last year. Unfortunately, she lost early this week playing on grass, but she's from the Czech Republic, and she's also a left-hander. How much would you identify with her, or vice versa? I guess she identify with you.
Well, probably she'd identify with me. I mean, she, you know, I was her hero or whatever. I was her role model, the player that she wanted to copy the most, she's a really good kid. I love the way she plays. I just wish that she was a little more consistent, but she's only 22, so when I go back and think about how I played when I was that age, I'm like, wow, she's miles ahead of me, you know. So I think she's got a great future ahead of her if she stays healthy.
If you could change anything in tennis, what would it be? Just in the overall scheme of things, the way the game is played, the rules, the schedule, whatever?
Well, the rules, I would definitely just do away with the let once and for all. only bounce the ball like 4 or 5 times before a serve. You couldn't do the 10 or 15 bounces that Novak sometimes does. Not necessary. And lessen the noise that the players are making because it's taken away too much from the game itself. So, yeah, the decibel level would need to come down.
In 1977, I was a frisky young guy, and I was at Wimbledon, and we were allowed to bet in those days, and there was a quarterfinal, I believe, between you and Betty Stova. And for some crazy reason, I had this idea that you were sure. Well, we all thought you were sure to win, and I bet $300. I was going to I was going to make $50, and I was going to use that money for the rest of the tournament because it was a sure thing you're going to win. So I was going to win $50, and then take. Well, I just wonder if you remember that match because that was quite an upset. And after, but of course, after that, you never lost at Wimbledon almost.
Yeah, I was on court one, and I think it was the only time I ever lost to Betty. She had a nasty game for grass, and she played well, and I was a little off, you know. And, yeah, I mean, I probably would have gotten to the finals, and then who knows? Yeah, I may have won earlier, but I think it was Virginia Wade's year no matter what. But, yeah, that one got away from me. But I just wasn't, you know, quite ready, I guess. You know, I was still a bit of a hothead, and I didn't quite get up to the level. I should have won that match, but you know, I wasn't quite in the elite yet.
Well, there's something else I remember about that match that maybe you don't recall, but the umpire had a stutter, so he was saying "Miss Navratilova," and I think that was annoying you a little bit too. And obviously, it was annoying me with what I had going on the match.
Yeah, I used to get annoyed at everything. So like I said, I was a bit of a hothead. I didn't quite have my temper under control at that point. And I think that was one of those turning points. That year, I started getting my shit together, so to speak, and not get so frustrated with myself or with others. You know, but it's like, really, how can they have a guy like that calling a match? Really? Right? I mean, I'm sorry, but that should not be his job. It's just, you know, go with your strengths. So that's what it was. And of course, nowadays, I would be much more respectful of the guy, and I certainly wouldn't be getting aggravated with him. I would, you know, if anything, I wouldn't feel sorry for him. But, you know, back then I was 20 years old and stupid. So.
Right. I think you've had offers to coach some of the players who are playing today. I don't know. How tempted have you been to coach one of the current players?
Well, I think if the situation was right, I would enjoy it on a part-time basis. Kind of like what Billie Jean, I think, did with me, you know, when she would just kind of show up at the big events and weeks leading up to the events. Nothing on a full-time basis because I have too much going on in my life and I can't do that, nor would I want to do that. But on a part-time basis, as a, you know, kind of a supplement coach, whatever, I would love that. Because I think that's where my biggest strength would be to help somebody, you know, get from 20 to top 5 or get from 10 to number 2 or maybe from 5 to number 1, whatever. Because it's so little that separates the players at the top level. It's the little things, and I think I'm good at picking those things up and figuring out a way to improve them. So,
way back in 1973, you played in Toronto at the Canadian Open, and I think you recall this, but the great Rod Laver, who is a left-hander, right, as you are, I think watched you play, and he made a compliment saying you were going to be a great player or something like that. I wonder, I think you were aware of that at the time, and how much of an influence did it have on you?
Oh, it was huge. I stayed in housing. I don't remember the people's name, but I still remember the girl. She had freckles and redhead, and I stayed at her house, and she was the one that told me that Rod watched me, and I got all, you know, I was just so excited. I was glad that I didn't see him because I would have probably not been able to pick up the racket at all. So it was great. I was very excited about that because that was like, you know, the ultimate stamp of approval. So I saw nothing was going to stop me now. If Rob Laver thinks that I'm going to be good, then I know I'm going to be good.
When people ask you, maybe people who aren't that familiar with tennis, ask you what it's like to play on a grass court, how do you explain playing tennis on a grass tennis court?
How do I explain playing tennis on a grass court?
Yeah, how it's different, say, from most people play on hard courts and on clay. And so how would you explain it just to maybe a novice about what it feels like to play on grass compared to the more conventional surfaces?
Expect a bad bounce. You need to get much closer to where the ball is actually bouncing than on a regular court. And, you know, if possible, take it in the air. That's what I would say. But just don't be, you know, expect a bad bounce. So be surprised when you get a great bounce.
And I think...
think the people in Montreal at the Rogers Cup are going to be graced with your presence this summer. You're going to be playing there along with your namesake or your reverse namesake, Martina Hingis. And what do you expect to have happen when you get to Montreal this summer?
Fun, a lot of fun. I've played against Martina a bunch of times now the last couple of years. Only played her once in an exhibition when she was 14. And then I haven't played her at all until the last 2 years, and I've loved it. I've loved the fact that she's on the tour. I played doubles against her once. She played with Kournikova, and I don't know who I played with, but we lost in Stuttgart. That was my only real match against her. And now, the last couple of years, I've played a bunch of these women's legends and mixed doubles against her. I even played a singles match against her in Liverpool last year on grass, and it's just a lot of fun to be on the court with her. And of course, with Jim and Agassi, I've played a few exos with them, and it's just going to be a blast. Anytime you get to be on a court with all these champions, it's a treat. So we all love it, you know. It's fun. And I know when I was, you know, I think when you're playing on the tour, you're thinking you're never going to be doing that stuff. And then, you know, the expectations go a little bit lower or a lot lower. And you're just playing the sport that you love with no expectations, no ambition really, except to share kind of what you do really well with a whole bunch of people. It's great.
And are you still pretty pleased with your level of play?
Yeah, it's good enough. I mean, I hold my own. I think I play better than any 55-year-old has a right to play, so that's okay.
Wilson Martinez, it's been a real pleasure to have you on the show tonight. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom. I'll see you in Wimbledon, yeah?
Yep. Well, I think it's really amazing, Roger, that Martina is playing tennis that is still at a very fine level. Same thing with McEnroe, well over 50, both of them. I think it says a lot about the sport that these two great champions still are really eager to still play the game.
Great interview, and boy, it's a thrill to hear her voice, and she sounds and looks great at age 55 for sure. Coming up, Tom's Mailbag and your chance to win Rogers Cup tickets. Don't go away. This is Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca. Grand Slam tennis coverage. This is Aces with your hosts Roger Lajoie and Tom Tebbit of Tennis Canada. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
It's a beautiful day.
You're listening to Aces, Canada's tennis radio show. Tom Tebbit and Roger Lajoie with you as always on this Thursday night. We got a couple of weeks off. We'll be back in a couple of weeks for a stretch of Thursday nights. Thanks so much for the feedback you've given us, folks, for both Tom's email. We always have a wide variety of questions. We have a ton of them tonight. And stick around because you're going to hear the mystery sounder voice, a tennis legend's voice. And when prompted, email us at roger@sportsnet590.ca. Roger@sportsnet590.ca. You can also do it on Twitter if you'd like, @TheRog590. Usually better for email, though. Either one, we're going to take a look at all the ones that come in on email and on Twitter, and you could win a pair of Rogers Cup tickets for opening night on Monday night. It's always a special night, Tom.
Roger, it's the first night that qualifying goes on the weekend, of course, and that first night, you just want to get it off with something really fun. So I know the people, the tournament director, all the people at Tennis Canada at the Rogers Cup get something special going on the Monday night. Really gets you into the event.
It sure does. It's fantastic. So stick around. That's coming up shortly. This segment of Aces is brought to you by National Bank. At National Bank, we know that you can't win without strong service. That's why we're proud to sponsor the 2012 Rogers Cup. Visit winningexchanges.ca for details. Now, every time on Aces, we ask for your questions, and you've always got a lot of them. So Tom now needs a second to put on his thinking tennis cap, which looks like just like a regular tennis cap, and he'll answer your questions, and we'll try to get them all in. We rarely do. So, Tom, please try to get that answer nice and condensed so we can get this in. Okay, what do you think?
Roger, you're always putting the pressure on me.
The pressure is intense.
My mind can only function at one speed, and it's very slow.
Okay, here's the first one. Mac, a regular listener, and thanks, Mac. I was having lunch with a buddy today, and we got to discussing some of the best single-handed backhands in the men's game. Names they came up with, Richard Richard Gasquet, Roger Federer, Stan the Man, Tommy Haas. I'm curious who Tom thinks has the best single-hand backhand on the tour, and how would he rank some of the ones that him and his buddy came up with? That's great.
Well, yeah. I mean, Gustavo Kuerten back in the day had a terrific one-handed backhand way back around Rod Laver. But nowadays, I think that list is pretty good. There's something explosive about Gasquet's backhand, but really, and Federer's backhand is beautiful as well. But Tommy Haas, I've watched him up close a few times, like at Indian Wells and places like that, and he just unfurls that thing. It's a thing of beauty. Obviously not quite as good a player as Federer, but a really fun guy to watch.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, Brian, another regular listener in Toronto. Brian, thank you for your question for Tom in the mailbag. It's regarding Andy Murray's coaching situation. I know it's early in the Murray-Lendl partnership, but what, if any, differences has Tom noticed in Murray's game since Lendl became his coach? And is a second serve an area that Murray really needs to improve at moving forward? Brian, thank you. How about him?
I think second serve is something he has to improve. And he also, his forehand is always going to be a liability. It's just not as explosive as the other top guys, Nadal, Federer, Djokovic, Berdych, Tsonga, those kind of guys. So the other thing as far as the relationship with his coach with Lendl, I think, has at least stopped him from looking over and whining all the time. But Murray's had a bit of a back problem, he's admitted, since the beginning of the year, and I'm wondering how much of a factor that's been in how he's playing these days.
Yeah, it could very well be, for sure. Tyson says, does the way the surface plays at Wimbledon change from the first week to the second week? The grass does get pretty worn out around the baseline after the early rounds, and I'm wondering if this makes the court slower as the tournament progresses, and if so, does that favor certain players? That's interesting. How much work do they do on the ground? So I imagine it's a lot, but is there a difference?
Well, there is a difference. The first match, you'll see next Monday when Novak Djokovic, the defending champion, plays the first match. The court is really lush, really greasy, and the ball stays very low because it hits and it's so thick that there's a lot there to sort of slow it down and there's not much to kick it up. But once that wears a bit and the players play on the court, it dries out and you get right through to the ground underneath, which is harder and the ball bounces higher. So there's always been a debate, is it faster when it's sort of wet and damp and the ball stays very low? So the ball goes slow, but it also stays very low. Or is it faster because when it's dry, bam, it hits and goes through faster, but it kicks up a little higher. So it's debatable which is which, but it definitely changes from the beginning to the end of the tournament.
Interesting, for sure. Now, AJ says he's not a betting man, but just for fun of it, if I set the over-under on the total number of majors Federer ends his career with, it would be 17.5. Is Tom taking the over or under? In other words, how many majors has Roger Federer got left, if any? Man, it's getting tough.
Well, 17.5 means that he's got to win two to go over, one to be under. And I would go with the under. I think he's got one more in him. But two more, I think he'd need some help. Maybe guys getting hurt, draws opening up, that kind of thing. So I think he's definitely got one more in him. To say he's got two more in him, you can't underestimate a genius like him. But I would think it's a bit of a big ask.
He's one of my all-time favorites. And who doesn't like him? I don't know, though. You see, it's eras, Tom, when you've got both Djokovic and Nadal to go through in the depth of men's tennis. I mean, there have been other times, almost like golf. It would be really tough for a golfer who is in his prime when Jack Nicklaus is in his prime. Like, I mean, when you got one guy gobbling up so many, when Tiger Woods was winning them all, it's tough. You've got those two guys to compete with. And there's other good players, too.
Well, Nicklaus won that one major at 46, and nobody expected it. So it's happened a bit in tennis. Arthur Ashe won his Wimbledon very late, like 31, 32. So I think it's definitely possible. And when you've got that talent and just things break the right way, but Wimbledon probably is the place. That's where he probably has the advantage over the rest of the field in terms of his experience, and he knows how to play on the grass.
That's Tom Tebbett. I'm Roger Lajoie. We're doing Tom's email. Just a couple of minutes. We'll have our mystery sounder coming up and listen in. You could win those Rogers Cup tickets. And Tom's going to wrap up the show talking about some Canadians, and a Canadian in particular who had some trouble recently trying to qualify. But we'll get into that in a second. Charlotte, regular listener to the show, thank you, Charlotte, for your email, wonders if the pure serve and volley player is a dying breed, and if so, what's the reason? Have changes to the surfaces or changes in the string technology made it more difficult for serve and volleyers, and who would be the best pure serve and volley player today? That's a great question.
Yeah, it is. I think obviously there's two things. They have slowed down the courts because there was one point, say 15 years ago, when Pete Sampras is playing Ivanišević at Wimbledon final, the average point was four hits of the ball or less. I mean, there just weren't any rallies. So they've generally tried to slow down the game. And the other thing is that the strings now are just so lively, and the players can hit the heck out of the ball. And so when it goes over the net, it's really traveling fast. It's also dipping. So if you're up there trying to volley, it's very difficult. I think Michael Lodra still serves and volleys a bit, Radek Stepanek, and probably the only guy who's a pure serve and volleyer now is Ivo Karlovic, and he's 6'10", doesn't have many good ground strokes, so he just tries to get in the net as soon as he can and smother everything because he's so big.
Okay, another question comes from Nelia, who says, two-part question regarding the Canadian junior system. I know the USTA development program is having their juniors train on clay more recently. Is Tennis Canada doing the same with our juniors? I always thought clay was a great service to learn the game, and I believe training on clay produces fitter and better conditioned athletes. It's an interesting point. And second part of the question, who are the up-and-coming junior players in this country that tennis fans should be keeping an eye out for in coming years? Thank you, Naila. Tom, what about that?
Well, they built four clay courts in Montreal, actually on top of the hard courts they have there, just specifically for that, so the players could play more on clay. So I think they're doing their best to try to get the players. And that's year-round, that facility. So the players are playing on clay, the juniors and other Canadian players who are in Montreal, and obviously some clay courts around Toronto, but not at the National Tennis Center. And in terms of the young players, obviously Philip Pelliot made the final of the juniors in France, as well as at the Australian Open. Eugenie Bouchard is a promising player from Montreal. Aaron Rutliff from Ontario is a good young player too. So there's players coming through, and you just have to hope that they can keep progressing because there's a lot of competition out there.
For sure. And thank you once again. Nadia emails in and says her question is about Del Potro. Does he have the fitness conditioning issues, or is it just bad luck? Twice he's had Roger Federer on the ropes at the French Open, a tournament that puts a premium on fitness and conditioning. In 2009 semifinal, had the lead and ran out of gas in that match, and goes on and says, and this year too, up two sets to Love. And Del Potro's injury during the match was a factor in Federer's comeback, not to mention the wrist injury that sidelined Del Potro for a while as well. Thanks, Nadia. Now, wrist injuries can happen to athletes. They all appear to be conditioning. Is this an issue with him?
Well, it's hard to figure out Del Potro. I mean, obviously, after he had that big match with Federer in 2009 at the French Open, he actually went on and beat Federer and won the U.S. Open later that year. So he did show he can beat Federer. He can play a long match. This year, I think that there was a knee problem, and that definitely affected him after winning the first two sets against Federer. So he's still a bit of an enigma since he's come back from the wrist injury. There just is a little something missing there. But hopefully for fans of Del Potro, that at some point soon he'll really click in. But so far, a little bit disappointing, a little bit not quite what we expected of him since he's come back.
All right, time for just one more. Apologize to the emails we couldn't get to, but you guys are great with your questions, and we do it every week on Aces. So we'll keep some as well and keep trying on Thursdays when we're on. We'll get as many as we can on. Goldine emails in and says, John McEnroe and Chrissy Everett were on Good Morning America this week. Chrissy picked Serena to win Wimbledon, and McEnroe predicted Federer. Does Tom agree or disagree with their picks? She likes Djokovic and Sharapova. I know it's always tough, but we do like predictions. If you were a betting man, and after the Navratilova interview, we've established you are, what and who would you pick at Wimbledon this year?
Well, I think I'd go with Djokovic. I still think, except on clay, and maybe even on clay when he's right, he's a better player than Nadal. So it's hard not to pick Federer, obviously, as well. But I would go with Djokovic, and I wouldn't be afraid to put a few shekels on Milos Raonic if the odds are right.
Cause really,
At some point, he's going to break through, and I think that serve, and as I said last week, there's a knack to play on grass. I think he's getting it. As far as the women, I think I'll be a little bit out of step here, or maybe just take a bit of a wild chance. But Kim Clijsters is doing okay this week in the tournament. She's playing. She hasn't played for several months, but she's a class player.
Well, that'd be a story, I'll tell you.
It would be a story. And yeah. I would think, you know, she's a class player, and you wouldn't underestimate her. So who knows if she might get through.
She's one of my favorites. I just love her as a tennis player, and I had a chance at a Rogers Cup to chat with her once, and she's just terrific player. That's Tom's mailbag. We do it Aces every Thursday we're on. Thanks so much for your emails. Great questions for Tom, and we always enjoy hearing your feedback to the show. We also enjoy our mystery sounder, and a great prize is available. It's Roger Cup tickets for Monday, and our mystery sounder this week's segment is brought to you by themerchantoftennis.com. Celebrating 20 years, merchantoftennis.com. Game, set, and shop. Tee up the mystery voice, Mr. Tebbett.
Well, I'll say no more. Here it is. There's been a few so far that we've been ashamed of. People couldn't get them. So
we better not be ashamed. That's all I can say about this. Listen in. Who's this guy?
It's just, you know, two of the best players in the decade, I think, more than anything. And I just think that, you know, Rafa and Roger the Wimbledon, it comes down to the best mover, the best athlete, the best player that's able to adjust to different bounces. And those two guys are the best in the world. And we saw that a few years ago when they played one of the best matches ever, maybe the best match ever. And me and Andre, we only really played a couple times at Wimbledon, and the one I beat him in 99 was the best I ever played out there.
All right. Who is that mystery voice? And now, email Roger at sportsnet590.ca. Roger at sportsnet590.ca. Tell us who it is. Put your full name in, please. Full name, so we can contact you and you could win a pair of tickets to the Rogers Cup on Monday. If you're selected among our winning entrants, you will go into our draw for the tennis racket at the end of the season. And congratulations to Stacey Schirmer. Stacey, congratulations. You have won last week's, and you're going to Rogers Cup on Monday night. Roger at sportsnet590.ca or on Twitter at TheRog590. Got a couple 2 minutes to quickly talk about the Canadians. You mentioned, of course, we're all talking about Milos and what he may do at Wimbledon, but you were mentioning a Canadian qualifier had some tough luck. Eh?
Yeah, well, I really felt sorry for Eric Choyka from Montreal. He's an interesting fellow. I believe he has an engineering degree from McGill. He's 25 years old. I think his rank is 207. He's playing the last round of the qualifying yesterday on Wednesday. He's two sets to love up. He's kind of out there living the dream. You know, I think it's really admirable. We always talk about the big names, you know, Milos and Alexander Wozniak, but a guy like Eric Choyka is out there doing the best he can. How do you think he feels? He's up two sets to love. He's going to get into the main draw at Wimbledon. This is like a dream his whole life. What's the one slam he'd want to play in? And the poor guy loses the last three sets, 7-6 in the four sets, where he came close in the fourth to a guy named Cervantes from Spain. You know, that's the flip side of the guys who hold up the trophies and the guys who make all the big bucks and stuff like that. But we got a feel for him that he got so close and just couldn't quite make it.
30 seconds, Milos at Wimbledon. You said don't bet against him this time around. Boy, Canadian tennis fans can't wait.
Well, I mean, we've seen him so far. You know, he came very close to beating Roger on the grass at Halle last week. He's got all the tools. We just hope maybe in the next, like I said, like a week and a half to get ready for Wimbledon, tune his game up on the grass, and he's got what it takes, I think. So it's just a matter of maybe a good draw, getting a little more confident, and really a lot of people are afraid to come up against him at Wimbledon. I can assure you of that.
No question. Hey, have a great time in England, and we'll definitely talk to you on some of the shows here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Tom, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks on Aces, too.
Great, Roger. Is it true the Rogers Cup is named after you?
Or is it
Roger Federer? Federer?
No, I don't like to talk about that because the company gets upset, but it is named after me. That's Tom Tebbit. I'm Roger Lajoie. Thanks very much for listening, everybody. Roger at sportsnet590.ca is email. If you know the mystery sound voice, Roger at sportsnet590.ca. You can always send your questions to Tom there or at TheRog590 on Twitter. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks on Aces, and you'll hear Tom from Wimbledon on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.